from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
You wanted to go on Lava Life. And the whole thing was, like, Lava Life made sense to me because I am the expert in Lava Life. Like, that's the one thing that I could always fall back on. And I hadn't been on for years. Mm. And wow, they just went and changed everything in a bad way, a really bad way. Yeah, if you live in Quebec, you can only get the French version unless you do. What is it? What's the deal?
You have to go into the URL and change a bit of code in the middle of the URL from lang equals fr to lang equals en.
Oh, so you hacked that shit.
I hacked it.
So ridiculous. I'm like, wow, do you think that there may be some English-speaking people in the province of Quebec?
Yeah,
I don't know.
But they do not matter. They don't matter.
You know what they're trying to do? Here's the thing. Lava Life in Quebec tries to compete with pretty much the biggest one, which is Réseau Contact, which is this... You want to know where all the really hot French girls? They're on that network. And, you know, it was the one dating network I could not fucking pick up on, sir. Because I can't spell in French. I can talk it, but spelling, I mean, I look like a retard.
Yeah, well, you can't compete with Quebec Guidos, or as you like to call them,
Quidos.
Quidos, yeah.
No. So you're back on the market, and you're ready to do some dating.
Here's the interesting thing about it, is I'm trying to write up my profile last night, and I just wasn't feeling, super inspired about doing it. So I had to think about it, because one of the things that I want to include in there, obviously, is my job, and you got to do it right. Because what am I going to say? I'm a sports blogger and I do a radio podcast about atheism. It's like, talk about making women run away screaming.
You know what? Here's the thing. I've been testing that out. Like, I'll just talk to people in general and women. Mm-hmm. And whenever they hear that, you know, I'm a blogger, it's a positive thing. They're like, oh, cool. What do you blog about? And then when I tell them about it, it's so random and crazy and weird. They love it.
Yeah, but you got to understand, it's a bit different when you're blogging about mixed martial arts and it's all dick and fart jokes and stuff like that. It is not the kind of job you can tell your parents about. Hey, my new boyfriend does this.
That's why you just sort of relegate it to blogger. I mean, in their minds, they can't make the difference between a comedy blogger and a straight up blogger. For them, blogger is a all-encompassing term, man.
But the key thing about it is I want to work my atheism into this profile, because the good thing is, obviously, they have, you know, what religion are you? And as good as they get, they don't have an atheist thing. They just have a non-religious one. I'm like, that doesn't really apply to me. And I want to put something in my post, because what I would really like I've got a couple of things that I'm looking for. And one of the things that I want is somebody that doesn't believe in stupid shit. Because I've had the girlfriends that believe in the stupid shit, and I've been okay with it, but I was thinking about it last night. I was thinking, why am I okay with this stuff? It's
good
basic,
point.
It's basically...
nonsense?
Well, it's indicative of a deeper problem. You know what I mean?
You mean like credulity? Like you hate the idea of dating someone who's credulous? Is it the whole thing?
Yeah, I suppose that's what it is, but it's just basically, if I'm looking for a reasonable person, and I got to kind of wonder, obviously there are many unreasonable atheists, but I just think that one of the things that I'm going through, if I'm going to go on this internet thing, this internet catalog of women, I'm going to try and pick out the model I want.
You know, I blame myself in this whole thing, because you wouldn't have cared before, but now I got you deep in this shit. You were deep in the muck, and the one thing you get when you're deep in that shit is kind of a growing intolerance for stupidity. You're just like, come on, everybody, I just keep reading about this stuff, and like, if you tell me the secret... I mean, we didn't just talk about the secret, we dissected the fuck out of it. So when you're having a conversation with somebody who brings it up offhand, you know, you kind of get that little hot feeling in the back of your head saying like, okay, calm down now, you don't know if this person is just repeating some stupid shit they heard, or if they really believe it. And that's the kind of like...
Here's the problem is I want to have conversations with these people that discuss existentialism and stuff like that. And these conversations don't go very far if you're a particularly religious individual.
True.
Because the answers are all there, and they're very boring and stupid.
And they haven't changed in a long time. You're like, surely, with the new answers that we have, they must throw some, I don't know, kinks in
there. Well, you know, well, here's the whole thing is that they'll add new things in there. They'll be like, well, you know, I believe in God, but the secret's also pretty cool, and Reiki is also awesome, and I'm just like, and horoscopes, it's like,
combinations of horrible, stupid shit. Why would you want to combine these things? So I can understand that whole thing. I mean, my girlfriend is not religious at all, but she doesn't care at all, which even to me it affects me somewhat. I'm like, fuck, baby, I wish you cared more, because that's a huge part of my life, man.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. The main breaks down to this. If this wasn't my life, if it wasn't what I was doing for a living, then I wouldn't care that much. But the truth of the matter is, you date a religious girl and you're doing this atheist thing, they're going to think it's fucking stupid and they're not going to like it. And
they're not going to support you.
I'm just sick and tired of having that Dewey Cox girlfriend. You're going to fail. When are you going to give up your dreams, Dewey?
So what you want is a true believer. Not someone who believes in God, but who believes in you. That's what you want.
Ask God.
Believe in me, Ryan.
Yeah.
Okay, so the show today, the basic crux of it is I received an email from a fan who asked me, what are your thoughts on the four horsemen of the atheist apocalypse? Now, if you don't know what that term is, it's a term of endearment for Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, Sam Harris, and Christopher Hitchens, which are basically the big top dogs of atheist literature.
Like, yeah, we're like the little barky bark chihuahuas.
Oh, man, we're not even chihuahuas. We're like, we're the hamsters of atheism. That's what we are. Yeah. Pet-wise, sit in the cage, you get somewhat entertained, but otherwise, nobody gives a shit. Mm. Hamsters. And you piss all over the place, and you make a mess, and you're a shitty pet, generally. So that's us. But, you know, you got the kind of, you know, like, collie golden shepherds purebred that are these dudes. And when you look at the amount of books they sold, I mean, Richard Dawkins sold millions of copies of his God Delusion, and everybody else, you know, have sold maybe 10,000 if you're lucky. That's the huge disparity between the big dogs and the small dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wanted to know what our thoughts on it were, and I thought it'd be cool to just talk about these guys and their books, because I don't know if everybody out there has read all of these guys' books, but luckily I have.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, is that a lot of, I figure that what kind of happens is the listeners to a lot of our shows aren't really in the atheist scene, they're just atheists, and they don't really give a shit, so.
I think it's divided along the middle, actually. The hardcores who like us, they're the ones who usually criticize when we make mistakes, like, the whole Denmark thing, which
was completely wrong.
Was unfortunately, yeah. It seems wrong. Yeah, we mentioned last show, you know, that Denmark was a mostly atheistic place. We assumed incorrectly.
It might be Belgium. It's one of those.
It's Sweden. It's Sweden.
It's Sweden.
It's Sweden.
Okay, it's one of those ones where they're
close. But here's the reason we thought it was Denmark is that there is. Out there that says that Denmark is mostly atheistic, and I found it again. But then when I started doing a little bit more digging. You know, like page fucking 404 error, and all of a sudden you're like, I think somebody may have made this up.
Oh, we got screwed by an. I just thought I was pulling out. I mean, I didn't know which place it was in the beginning, so my bad.
I would say no to Sweden. I suggested Sweden twice, and you said no.
Yeah, here's the whole thing though. If we express doubt about which place it is, then
don't believe us. I think it's a good. Instead of focusing on the facts, focus on the idea. I think that's generally...
What, you know, a cop-out.
This is why we are the annoying hamster of fucking atheism. Look, we're just two dudes who have limited resources who just basically talk shit about religion. And that's what you guys appreciate, and that's what we keep on giving you. And that's why you're the bonus members. But, okay, so let's talk about these four dudes now. We can start with the one that you did read.
I know.
Sam Harris.
You want to do with Sam Harris?
I want to do Sam Harris first because Sam Harris was the first guy of all of these that I read. Like, I had read some Richard Dawkins before, but The End of Faith came out before The God Delusion. And the reason I actually read that book was because I watched a documentary called The God Who Wasn't There. It was like a private documentary that was made. And it's a really, really well put together film. And
when
some of the people
you say it's a private documentary, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's one guy who did it. He did it himself, and he basically got funding himself. It's like this one dude, Brian Fleming, who basically used to be a Christian, who said, all right, I'm going to make a documentary on the fact that Jesus is not a real person.
Fucking props.
It was props. The music was good. The fucking production value was awesome. And it was just free. He just gives it free. You can buy it if you want, but it's otherwise free.
Does he make you feel like a bad atheist?
No, but you know, this is when I watched this was when I really started getting turned on to the whole atheist subculture, I guess is the best way to describe it. And some of the people that he interviewed was Sam Harris. He interviewed Sam Harris, and just listening to him, I was like, fuck, this guy makes a lot of sense. I want to read his stinking book. And I do. And it kind of like changed my perception of everything. So first off, like, that's what I want to say about Sam Harris's book, is that someone who's just been thinking about religion but doesn't really know where it goes needs to read Sam's book, because it asks a lot of really profound and frightening questions about, you know, moderate Christianity in general, because his whole treatise is saying that the moderates are part of the problem.
The moderates enable the
fundamentalists, yeah, basically, because they create this, you know, environment of we're thinking silent, critically is not the word of the day.
Yeah, the silent implication that these people agree with the fundamentalists, which for the most part is, and that's, you know, something he did really well is in The End of Faith, was he made it very clear that most Muslims are not extremists. It's just that they're basically being seen as complicit.
Well, it's also the point that he had, which I thought was really poignant, is the fact that he says, look, you can turn around to the fundamentalist and say you shouldn't do that, but you can't blame him for interpreting the same texts that you did. I mean, if anything, the fundamentalist has it more right. I mean, fundamentalist Christians who sort of like take all these crazy attitudes about women's role in society, about, you know, how you're supposed to deal with all kinds of, you know, modern problems. These guys are more literalistic. They're following the book, the one that, you know, whatever book that might be. And, you know, that kind of made me realize that all of these things, you know, essentially moderate Christians were telling me, saying like, oh, well, it really, Christianity deals mostly with love and peace and that kind of stuff. And I mean, when you don't study the stuff, you're like, well, okay, I kind of guess. And yeah, Jesus did sound like, you know, they do a really good job, Christians, of painting Jesus as this great guy, you know, and you can find it difficult to say, well, no, you know, he wasn't that great. You have to know your shit if you're going to say that. So Sam's book, that, and his follow-up Letters to a Christian Nation, I felt are kind of probably the most accessible of the books. And that's, you know, Richard Dawkins is a great writer, but I just found that Sam Harris's book was just a lot more interesting.
Yeah, it's a page-turner. That was the first book on atheism I read, and it actually did not suck. I enjoyed it quite a lot.
Well, you know what else was kind of interesting? The types of risks that he was taking, because one of the things that he talks about in the last chapter is on spirituality and experiences, like, because one of his big things, and you can read this on his wiki, is that apparently he's
although who knows, because hey,
it's Wikipedia.
Yeah,
but you know, I tend to believe it specifically because of his writing, is that you know, he sounds like the kind of guy who likes to take serious ass trips, and by trips I mean like he wants to fucking experience consciousness in a different way. And that's kind of a huge thing for Sam Harris, consciousness, because, you know, he studies neuroscience, and one of the things that he wants to do is he wants to try to explain consciousness. You know, why does it exist? How does it work in humans? And so on and so forth. And he finds that drugs are a really good way to experience different types of consciousness. He's from the Timothy Leary,
yep,
school of fucking consciousness. And I can kind of dig that, you know? Like, I like people who fucking take weird and unexpected ways to understand our own minds or understand our own experiences. That may not be my bag. Like, I'm not that curious about MDMA, I'll be honest with you. But
it's just because you believe the bullshit about it, and you haven't really looked into it.
I wouldn't say, actually, it might be a combination of things. The other combination is that I kind of like where I'm exploring my thoughts now. When I become bored of those, maybe I will experiment.
Then it'll be a gateway.
No, just that you can, you know, I'm still trying to rationalize and understand my own view of the universe as it develops and matures, and I don't want to, you know, go too fast. Because digging into that fucking LSD, MDMA fucking rabbit hole can leave a person very overwhelmed.
Well, here's basically how I put it, is that imagine you're hiking up a mountain, and then all of a sudden you get picked up by a spaceship and just thrown somewhere
into space.
It's just thrown up in the air, and you land somewhere on the mountain. You don't know where the fuck you are. You got to find your way back, but you're way closer to the top of the mountain but you might be off the beaten path. That's how I would explain thinking about your own consciousness and your existence when it comes to doing drugs. Is that it's actually, I would say that most people, it's not very useful, but it could be.
I think it depends also on how, what your own level of development is intellectually when you embark on this, because it'll have an effect, you know? It's like a guy who doesn't know shit, who takes fucking these drugs, is just going to have a weird trip, and at the end of it, basically say like, oh man, I totally tripped out of my fucking mind. Woo, yeah. It's crazy.
All those juggalos. All those insane clown posse fans doing acid probably aren't thinking the same thoughts as Sam Harris is.
Right. And
but that, just to clarify, though, the only thing that Sam Harris has admitted to doing that we know of is MDMA, ecstasy.
Right. So. Okay. So, I mean, I've tried that, not a large amount, but a bit, and I didn't necessarily find that it kind of made me think about it all that much.
It was not the right situation.
No. Okay. That's fair enough, too. But basically, okay, like I said, of the four ones, I would say that at least in terms of the book, End of Faith is probably my favorite of the four books. Now, that leads me to talk about Richard Dawkins, who's probably of the four guys, my favorite guy, and the only reason is because of sort of like the strength of his scientific work. I mean, The Selfish Gene, Ancestor's Tale, I mean, these are awesome books, and The Selfish Gene had essentially, even the last chapter, which dealt with memes, fucking changed everything. People are still talking about memes. Memes is just, if you, in case you didn't know, memes is, it was Dawkins' way of trying to explain how culture might evolve. And now he just hinted at it. He says, well, rather than just have a genetic replicator, maybe you can have an idea that functions as a replicator, that there's an idea in it that says, spread me. You know, and he compared that to a virus, you know, like a thought virus. And not in any way that's harmful, but just in a way that it does one thing, it replicates itself. And I mean, those are some significant, you know, scientific achievements. So right there, you got to, you know, you got to tip your hat and say, you know.
Yeah, I got a lot of respect for him. But my problem with him is basically where he's being put in the atheist community. He ends up arguing with a lot of people, and he's a dick when he is dealing with religious people. He just is.
I think the problem is he's a bit of a humorless dude. I'm not saying he doesn't have a sense of humor. I'm just saying he's not that good.
It's just prissy and
it
stuck up.
It is a bit prissy. It's not really that good. And it's just because Dawkins works really well with other smart people. Like, he'll have a conversation with other smart people, and he will just, you know, he will...
it's a treat to listen to.
It's a treat to listen to, because he's not just one of those bogus interviewers that just like, asking stupid questions. He knows his shit, too, so he will stimulate dialogue. I mean, I put up on the site a couple weeks ago his extended interviews with Steven Pinker and that kind of stuff. He has tons of that. And Dawkins is the kind of man that you want to listen to the extended interviews, because that's when the shit really starts getting deep. I mean, you can trust, based on sort of like his own intellectual understanding, that if you really want to know your shit, fucking talk to Richard Dawkins. Like, the man has his paws in everything.
Yeah, he's a smart dude.
He's a really smart dude. But, you know, the book, The God Delusion, what I found was really great about that book, which is probably my second favorite book, is at least in the way that he kind of breaks down the whole argument. Like, he presents all the cases, you know, the ontological argument, the argument for design, and he breaks it down. He breaks it apart. So if you want to have the strongest arguments in general, then you need to read The God Delusion, because when you read that, it will take all of those, you know, things that you were always curious about, like saying, hey, yeah, I really didn't think about that. There does seem to be indication of design, or how do you explain the fine-tuning of the universe? Well, if you really want to know what the counter-argument to that is, his book is probably the strongest source for that.
Here's the deal. There's an Australian comedian that I once listened to who basically said most people aren't smart enough to be atheists because they don't understand the concept behind...
Oh, yeah, it's John Safran,
right? Yeah, but behind why God doesn't exist. If you want to understand these things, then The God Delusion is the book to read.
Yeah,
because then you will be smart enough to know why, scientifically, God does not exist.
Yep.
I mean, you get a feeling for it, a general vibe, the deeper you go down the evolution rabbit hole. Because that shit just blows your mind.
It
the
really
deeper
does,
you right. like the longer you, the more you pull at the string, the crazier colors that come out.
Well, remember when I was asking you the other night, we were watching Planet Earth, which is this documentary that if you have not watched this, What the fuck is wrong
with
you?
Yeah, it's like a 12-part documentary by BBC, Richard Attenborough. In high definition. Yeah, there you go. Richard Attenborough was the one that did Jurassic Park and almost died. Yes, okay.
They're brothers. They're brothers, actually.
Damn, those brothers.
They're cool.
They're so talented. God damn it.
Interestingly enough, I think I've mentioned this before on radio shows, David Attenborough is said to be the most well-traveled man in the history of mankind. He's been to every continent many, many times, more so than anyone else. He's been traveling for 50 years everywhere. So if you want a worldly man, David Attenborough is your dude. And if you're not a David Attenborough fan and you don't know anything about him, go fucking pick up this, watch it in HD, and I suggest smoking a little ganja before you do, because it will blow your mind, and you really need to kind of like look and feel not only the diversity of life, but the diversity of climate, and just to get the scope of your fucking planet. Because when you sit at home, you know, watching TV, you can kind of forget that the Earth is massive.
Yep, and there's a whole bunch of shit going on that God doesn't care about.
That's nature, sort of like the brutal struggle. Like when you watch and you're looking and you're like, will that gazelle get away from that line? Nope.
Well, just the operation of Earth. Like Earth is basically not a living being, obviously, but just as something that's constantly in flux through scientific laws.
Yeah, four really basic laws, and how they interact with one another is the result. That is Earth. You know, it's they're all really fundamentally, at least, simple laws. But they create just intense complexity, man. Just mind-bogglingly complex shit. Now, remember when I was asking, we were watching this, and I was saying, what would blow your mind more? The fact that on other planets, like, life developed in almost exactly the same fashion with the sort of, like, the same, types of amino acids combining.
Or like, the rule of two you were telling me about?
Yeah, exactly. Like, in biology, most things develop in twos. That's why you have two limbs, two eyes, that kind of stuff. It's just a redundant system, and that's just one that works. So most creatures have it. That's why your brain, say, even is divided in the left and right hemisphere. They're redundant hemispheres. It's just everything grows in twos, basically. It's just one of those rules that you keep seeing. It keeps popping up again and again and again because it works. And then you think to yourself, is that how it works on other planets? Because, fuck, it does work down here a lot. Honestly, I don't know, but I'm not sure what would blow my mind more. If life was developing in kind of the similar, you know, similar ways, given the same environmental pressures, or that they developed completely different. I mean, both would blow your mind. And both kind of, like, make you think that this whole God question is ridiculous. Fucking ridiculous. Do I give a shit if some 2,000-year-old dead Jew fucking died for my sins? No, I don't. I don't believe I'm sinful in the first place, so I don't care if he was basically tortured to death. Not really my bag. It's not even a good story. You want a good story? Read fucking Hercules and
Harry
Dionysus.
Potter.
Harry Potter, there you go. Harry Potter's a better example. Okay, so that's the main thing about Richard Dawkins. You're obviously going to read his book if you're into atheism. So I'm sure this is no surprise to anybody, because I would love to hear someone who listening to a radio show that actually hasn't read that book. Okay, next up on sort of like my list of books that I like the most is Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything. Now, I always try to take sort of like a really neutral, not neutral, but intellectually honest approach whenever I criticize religion, so on and so forth. I mean, yeah, I'm a fucking aggressive curmudgeon, but I still want to be fair, you know, and I don't want to start fist fights. But fucking Christopher Hitchens is the type of dude who does start verbal fist fights, and I love it. Love fucking every minute of his crusty ass self telling you why religion sucks ass. It's like, if you ever had a bad day and you're like, man, I can't stand religious people, go read his book. And you will put it down and be like, ah. It's like you got a hand job for like 10 hours. It's fucking literary hand job.
I've had 10-hour hand jobs. They don't feel good.
Okay, well, a good 10-hour hand job. I don't know.
Honestly, I don't understand how a hand job could be good for long. Like,
I'm saying it's like a hand job that is good, but for 10 hours or however long it takes for you to read.
Okay.
So it's a good thing.
So we're not talking about the actual physical, when you're thinking about
not saying a 10-hour hand job. We're saying a hand job for 10 hours. A hand job like
I understand what you're talking about. The level of enjoyment that you would get out of a, say, 10, not even 10, like 3 minutes worth of hand job, but equal
10 hours.
Okay.
Or however fucking, like I said, it's not that lengthy of a read, but it's just, I don't know, there's a way that he's a great writer, like, first and foremost. If you've ever listened to him talk to, I mean, he's a really eloquent man.
When he's not drunk.
Actually, he's cut down on drinking. And smoking.
Oh, he's cut down, has he?
I think he's trying to quit. Uh-huh. Strangely enough. Like, I'm like, Christopher Hitchens, you? Who I love booze? I think his fucking liver is going like, help me!
Good, I can understand it, because that was one of those things that I did a little bit of research before the show. And even if, I don't know if he is a drunk or not, but that is the narrative that is being created for him.
It's unfortunate, too, because you're just like, so? Even if he was, what's your point? He's drunk, and meanwhile, he's beating you in a debate. You should be ashamed of yourself. A drunk man beat you in a debate. Okay, here's the thing. You said it before. Like, what you find interesting about Hitchens is that he's a journalist and not a scientist, right?
So he has nothing to do with the scientific community. He's just one of those guys that wrote a bunch of books, and he was a journalist for a while. He was a book critic, and he's just a guy that just gives a shit about this stuff and isn't afraid that his lack of a PhD invalidates his opinion, which is what more people have to fucking think. I don't care if you're out of high school or you got a master's degree in fucking philosophy. We all have worthwhile ideas. Well, not we all, but everybody has the capacity to have worthwhile ideas.
I've always said that, you know, statistically, everyone probably gets at least one great idea, you know? I mean, maybe not 100%, but fucking it comes close. You know, you listen to these people sometimes, and they're dumb as shit, but they'll fucking surprise you with this idea, and you're like, wow, that was good.
Yeah, whatever field of excellence they happen to be in.
I think it's just a kind of a natural consequence of the way our brain works. I mean, pattern-seeking animals, right? You give someone so much stimulation, and even if you think that, you know, you're watching TV and you're not being stimulated and so on and so forth, I mean, the truth of the matter is, compared to our ancestors, we were being bombarded with all kinds of imagery, ideas, thoughts, and even if you can try to avoid them, they still fucking seep through, and your brain is still processing them and trying to arrange them in new sequences.
Yeah, even hacky shows like Law & Order and CSI generally try and give you some rip from the headlines, fucking, ooh, think about this for a few seconds thing.
I think if you really want to better yourself and be more intelligent, I think the trick is have intelligent conversations with intelligent people, because even if you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, listen to what people are saying, you know, kind of dissect it in your own brain. Does this make sense? Does it work? And, you know, after a person tells you something, why don't you go and find out if it was true or not? Because a lot of people can be very convincing about things, like, for instance, the fact that Denmark is mostly atheistic, but are completely wrong. It happens. You can say something with certainty and still be wrong. It happens. You have to be wrong a million times to be correct once, in my opinion. Like, the amount of times I've been goddamn wrong, I don't even want to think about it. I used to believe in ghosts, and I'm very embarrassed about that. I went ghost hunting once. God.
Oh, man, I used to go ghost hunting as a kid all the time.
I was a fucking 18-year-old, man.
That's pretty bad then. Because, yeah, when I was like 8, I bet my brother like $50 that I was going to be a Ghostbuster when I grew up. And he's still harassing me. And I said, I still have time.
Well, what do you think? You know what? I keep seeing this trend generally between all guys that are, you know, like the bigger atheists blogs out there. They have something in common. These dudes used to be really religious, and now they're not. And you kind of notice that trend that when you believe in something really strongly and then all of a sudden you find out that you were a dumb idiot, you feel compelled to tell other people because you find yourself generally smart. And you're like, if I'm smart and I can be so easily fooled, everyone can. I got to go out there and I got to talk to people. That's the fucking... That's always been my thing. All right, let's go back to Hitchens and his book. The only remaining thing I want to say about it is that, look, I don't agree with Hitchens on some of his ideas and philosophies. I consider him to be pretty fucking right-wing on a lot of issues. But even if you don't agree with him, you have to read him. Because in terms of like the dudes who do their research, Hitchens is bar none the best. All right, he will pull out things from like, what about this ecumenical court in the 12th century that did this? And you're like, goddamn, sir. Goddamn. Like, this is why he is a force. If you want to, you know, test your chops, if you're religious, go have a fucking debate with Hitchens. If you can hold your own, I will give you a prize. It will not be a big one.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be about atheism. It could just be about whatever your particular religion is, because he knows enough about it to prove that it's bullshit.
But then again, you know, when you think about it, it shouldn't be altogether that hard. I mean, every priest that you've ever met is an expert in nonsense. He knows a lot about shit that's not real. It's like, how many angels can fit on the head of a pin? I don't care. I don't fucking give a shit. It's like, remember we were saying that you could, it's like winning 1,000,000 points in a video game. It doesn't have any fucking consequence in the real world. It's not real knowledge and skill. It's fucking fake. It just turns out that we give people props for being expert in nonsense.
It's funny. I was reading this website that was basically dividing up all the different religions and saying, here's what their stance is on all these different things. And one of the things was homosexuality, and they were talking about the Catholic Church and how there was all these different rules about basically if you have gay fantasies, that isn't a sin, but if you act on them in any way, even with a woman, that is a sin. So basically, if you're banging your wife, your beard wife, and thinking about having sex with a dude, that's a sin.
But I thought the whole thing in the Bible, at least in the Old Testament, was like even thinking about it was supposed to be that whole sin, which is... That's the real clusterfuck. That's the real kind of mess with your goddamn head, because how many of you out there can really control your roaming thoughts when you see, I don't know, a beautiful guy or a beautiful woman walk down the street and you're like, God damn it, yeah. You're like, shit, apparently I just sinned. Oh, thank you, God, for giving me that instinct to want to fuck the shit out of that bitch.
Or dude.
Well, the bitch was meant for both.
Oh, okay.
I'm nondescript about bitches.
Okay,
the people you want to fuck is what I call bitches.
Damn, that's rough.
I'm not saying that there's anything about their personality. I'm just saying that that's how you know them, as the people you want to fuck. It's like you didn't give them any thought about, are they nice people? You just looked at them and be like, yeah, oh. That's all you did. Mm. And it happens because you are, you know, a horny monkey once in a while. It comes out, you know. Fucking see somebody half naked, your penis gets hard. You can't help it, even when you're in public. Mm-hmm. And you thank God that you have a big shirt.
Okay, let's stop digging and get out before we can't get out.
Okay, here's the last one on my list that I would say is probably not going to be everybody's favorite book, but it's...
Well, we're talking about the dude, Daniel Dennett, right?
Yes, Daniel Dennett. And his book, Breaking the Spell.
Yeah, I actually thought that Daniel Dennett was dead.
Well, he did have a pretty severe heart attack, so you weren't too far off. I'm just glad I got to actually meet him before he died. Like, I had my
before
list.
Before he dies, because he is still alive.
Oh, right. Before he dies. But I have a list of people that I wanted to meet. Now, I went from older to younger. I still have Hitchens and Harris that I want to just meet. And I mean, meet as in sort of shake their hands, sign my fucking book. And otherwise, look, I'm not even going to pretend that I'm in the fucking same league as you. You know, what the hell's the point? But I can still be a fan and still say, like, keep fighting the fight, guys. I just wanted to shake your hand. And I have that in my little, you know, list of things that I did. So luckily, I still got to meet Dennett. And the story of that is actually kind of interesting. I sent him an email because I was still thinking back in the old days of doing one of those conferences, you know, like just an atheist conference. I'm like, why not? You could fucking make money with that.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the problem is it's Montreal, so it's not really the best place to do it. But I emailed him and I was like, how much do you charge? Because I know these guys charge fucking a lot, but I wanted to have a price. And he emails me back and he's personally, which blew my fucking mind. And he's like, well, I'm doing a speech on one of my books at McGill. And why don't you just show up? So I did. And nobody checked for my student ID, which is why I love McGill for that shit. They don't really give a crap. Amount of times I've walked in lectures and that
they,
kind of stuff.
They want the students from Concordia to see how awesome McGill is.
Exactly.
They're like, yeah, you fucking welfare suckers.
But, okay, Breaking the Spell the idea of it is intriguing because Dennett's a philosopher and his attitude is saying, can we take a scientific approach to understanding religion? So unlike all these, the other books are basically telling you why religion is wrong or why religion doesn't work. He doesn't go that route at all, actually. His route is just trying to say, can we understand the history of religion? Can it sort of like be broken down so that we can understand how folklore changes from one society to the next and how those elements are incorporated? He also talks about belief in belief and why we, you know, individuals might think it's important to simply believe in God rather than just, you know, actually believe. He's also mentions things like it's impossible to determine what belief really is because a person can always really lie or they assume that they're Christians even though they believe completely different things. And even Dennett says that from the perspective of religion, he doesn't see it as a negative or a positive thing. You know, even if it was negative, he said, well, music, if you were told tomorrow that music would cause brain damage, would you stop listening to it? And the obvious answer is no. If people find beauty in something, they'll continue to do it, even if everyone tells them it's fucking harmful, which was a fucking very valid point. You know, it's hard to ignore. And like I said, Dennett has, at least in terms of the ideas, the strongest of all the books because it's a book of philosophy, of religious philosophy. With that said, it is practically unreadable. I mean, Dennett is not the easiest fucking author to read, honestly. Like,
well, he's better than our Buckminster Fuller.
Oh my god, our Buckminster Fuller. Oh my god, that guy was just nuts.
Just to explain to you how badly this book is written, he gets a Japanese person to
edit. I don't want to talk about that travesty. Because, you know, it's unfortunate that a man who's just so intelligent just can't seem to put anything, you know,
coherent
on paper. Yeah. Mm. And keeps inventing words. Stop inventing words, people. Anyways, with that said, I find Breaking the Spell is kind of intriguing in his approach to it. And the other thing I like, too, about Dennett is he's a philosopher, but he's also a philosopher of science. So he explains, like, kind of that you have to look at evolution not as a crane in the sky, which is how intelligent design people would sort of like look at it, right? Mm. But he just basically says it builds on itself. It doesn't pick itself up from the bootstraps. It's just you have to go down and view it as not somebody mingling with things from up above, but basically those things themselves being responsible for change.
Yeah, it's consequences of the survival of certain genetics over others.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much my four. Now, there's a fifth guy that I find...
But wait a second. You didn't even let me say anything about Dennett.
I'm sorry. I didn't think you knew anything about him.
You know what I do know about him?
Okay.
He started that Bright bullshit.
Oh, all right. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Because I would say that is probably... as far as branding goes, we're stuck now. We got stuck with this fucking... They tried to organize this thing, and it's called the Brights, and it's just the worst fucking name in the goddamn world, and I have no idea. Just the fact that he let that slip and thought that the Brights was a good name, and I'm going to throw my weight behind the Brights, shows that he's got some fucking problems.
Well, look, you ever hear of the justification for it? I mean, the justification sounds...
Even worse?
No, I would say it actually sounds plausible enough that people would ignore the basic problem with the name. Like, because they're saying, well, we're not saying that we're brighter. It's just that this is a brighter idea and it's more freeing and that kind of stuff. And you're like, at first your brain tells you, okay, that makes sense. And then you're like, wait, what?
Exactly. We're not saying you guys are dumb. We're just saying you're not bright. That I don't understand why you're so upset
Why do you gotta be so upset? I never liked the Bright whole thing. I even tried to sign up and I tried to test it, and generally, no. But I mean, it was a good first attempt at kind of an atheist organization. I think what's happened as a consequence is that people have started their own stuff.
But this is my whole problem with it, is it wasn't a good first kick at the can. It was a fucking fail. It was
Cans always fail.
But you ever see like something on the ground that looks like you can kick it, and you kick it and it turns out to be
a tree stump?
Solidly rooted to the ground. That's what I consider the Bright movement to be. It's just an epic fail. And it's
crushing foot fail.
And he was, you know, I can respect the fact he's one of the four horsemen and he tries to get this thing up and going, but I'm just like, man, it's just...
Well, he's on the periphery in terms of the four. Mm. He's not really talked about much because, number one, he looks so amicable. I don't think anyone wants to have a debate with him because he looks like Santa Claus.
He does.
I mean, he has been called Santa Claus. He's mentioned it several times in his books.
I want him to give me presents.
I do.
And the irony of a guy who looks like Santa Claus fighting against God is just delicious.
Santa versus God. Yep. Santa versus God. Okay, beyond the whole Bright movement thing, which is an entire show unto itself, I want to talk about the fifth guy that's not mentioned. And this is the guy that's actually, in my opinion, written more on the subject of not direct atheism, but... On kind of religion and superstition, that kind of stuff. And that's Michael Shermer. You may know him as the editor for Skeptics Magazine. And Michael Shermer is a very interesting guy. You know, he used to be a fundamentalist, and he was studying psychology, and he went to school, and he started having to learn biology. And all of a sudden, it blew his fucking mind. And, you know, he basically became a skeptic and, you know, an atheist, obviously. But three of his books that he has, I recommend to everybody. In fact, I got my little cousin to listen to this because I'm like, if you want to understand what I do, read Why People Believe Weird Things, which is one of his main books. And basically in it, he covers everything from, you know, superstition to, you know, like all the stuff that we make fun of all the time, basically. Mm-hmm. And he tries to sort of lay out why even bright people would believe in things that are so ridiculous. So it's a good place to start. Now, his next book, The Science of Good and Evil, really, I find in my head, quantify the question of how can we be good without God? Like, if you really want to understand how that's possible, read The Science of Good and Evil. Like, he just lays it out so comprehensively. It is a very good book. And his third book, which is Why Darwin Matters, sort of like tells you, you know, so it's kind of like the case against intelligent design. So if you hate intelligent design, read his damn book. I mean, he should... I guess there's only four because there were only four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. But fuck, man, Michael Shermer needs to be on that shit. And if you look at his activity, I mean, editor of Skeptics Magazine, and Skeptics Magazine is a very decent publication. So I'm like, I would say that it is a shame that nobody talks about Michael Shermer. We should read his shit more.
Yeah.
Much more.
But, you know, there's you can only get so many scientists in the whole... into the public consciousness. And I think it's actually pretty impressive that...
That we have four already?
Well, you know, we don't really have four because, number one, Hitchens is just a drunk. I mean, we got Dawkins, and Dawkins is a big one, and most... I'm not going to say most people know him, but, I mean, after Stephen Hawking and a couple other guys, who do you have? Dawkins is pretty high up there, yep. And he's...
The other guy that's higher is a man by the name of Steven Weinberg. But he doesn't really make any of his stuff like public. He's too deep into in particle physics.
I'm not talking about who's doing shit. I'm just talking about as far as, you know, name recognition and just fame. Because when you talk about, remember back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, it was scientists were a big fucking deal because these were the people that were going to save you from the red menace. It's like it was their science, like fuck Sunday afternoon football. It was the Americans versus the Russians and who was going to do the most awesome scientific shit.
Let me tell you what, though. Of all of those guys, though, I would trade them all for Carl Sagan. I want Carl Sagan back. God damn it. You know, it broke my heart when I read his last book because I knew it'd be his last book and I didn't want to finish it, but I did. Mm-hmm. And it just made me really sad because Carl Sagan was such a gentle man, but at the same time, like, you know, he was bang on about everything. Read Carl Sagan's books. It's like the only thing I can say. Candle in the Dark, by the way, is probably his best one. And it was tragically his last one as well. It's kind of like he gave us his opus before he died, but he already knew that he was dying, so I guess he put in sort of like the maximum effort on that last one.
Mm.
And the other thing that I love about Carl Sagan too is that when the Voyager spacecraft took off, like he convinced NASA to turn the thing around so it could take a photo of Earth from like really, really far. I think even beyond Mars's orbits or something like that. And that was one of the title of his book, Pale Blue Dot, because that's what it was. It was a tiny ass little blue dot in blackness, and it kind of makes you think. You're like, whoa. We think the Earth is really massive, and for us it is, but wow, it's a speck.
We think we're a big deal. Like, I mean, humanity in general, we ain't shit.
We are so not shit.
We're not even close to even adding... Well, truth be told, we are pretty awesome, but we still ain't shit on the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, we're essentially kind of like the discarded poo of this planet. You know, like all the energy that's gathered from the sun and all that other kind of stuff. I mean, we're that poo. Think about how weird it is that you eat things to maintain your own survival. That's weird. You know, I was eating I was drinking a strawberry shake, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm drinking fuel. It's like, that's what it is. It's no different from the fuel you put in your car, except for my body's going to be breaking that shit down. That's weird. That's fucking weird. I'm eating off the excess of energy that's being gathered from, you know, self-replicating biological entities. So we're weirdos on a tiny ass blue fucking speck. So yeah, maybe that's my sixth guy, Carl Sagan. Fucking go read him. All right, with that, I guess that pretty much sums up all of our all the atheist guys.